It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Hello, everybody. I am live at Sundance at the Instant Karma at the Cabin. And joining me today is Matt Yoka. You are the director, producer, writer, everything of the...
Not everything. There's a lot of people who help make the film, but thank you, yes.
Okay.
It's a very, very personal project, yeah.
Well, the film is called Whirly Bird. And I know that, for me, I'm very interested in this because it talks about a news journalist using the helicopter to capture a lot of news stories. And I have actually, I'm started out in the business as a traffic reporter.
Oh.
So I was up in the airplane and, you know, So I get that part of it.
Amazing.
But
yeah.
For my end, they went, oh, it's too expensive to have the planes and the helicopters. And so most of the news organizations around here just stopped doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're doing a documentary on the Whirly Bird in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not getting rid of their helicopters anytime soon, are they?
Well, no, they're not. The city demands that kind of form of transportation if you're ever going to want to get to a story as it's breaking. And there still seems to be a pretty robust news van culture. You see them driving around town. But, for example, I could be driving down the 10 freeway and I'll see a news van stuck going the opposite direction in bumper-to-bumper traffic. So, and as Zoe explained, it almost was my subject, Zoe, who flew the helicopter, who bought the helicopter, she explained that it was just the only way to really get to the center of a story. And so for when it comes to Los Angeles, the helicopter is a vital tool in news gathering.
Now, there was a part of the movie where Zoe does explain that she was just going to go and get lessons, and she had $40,000. I can't remember.
Right.
I think it was ten thousand.
Uh-huh.
She says she has $10,000 to do this, and then all of a sudden it says, "Okay, you have $100,000 credit."
Right.
What? I don't understand. How did it go from $10,000 to $100,000?
I don't think it was ten. You know what? I'd have to. I'm not remembering the exact number at the moment. I think it's $50,000.
Okay.
I think so. She saved up $50,000 reporting on the ground, covering stories on the ground, putting money away. And when she had $50,000 saved, she went to Bell Helicopter. And at Bell Helicopter, she said, I had $50,000 cash. I cover news stories for a living. I want to buy a helicopter. What can we do? And with $50,000 cash, I mean, think of it as a down payment.
Okay.
So what they did was look at her invoices that she was making at the time, which was actually really good money. I mean, as a news stringer and a good news stringer, she was getting a lot of scoops, and getting those scoops had big paydays. And so she was then allowed her to be cash rich and get and put a down payment on and buy a helicopter. So that credit that they're talking about is there. You have credit for $500,000, meaning you could buy up to a $500,000 helicopter.
God, yeah. It just in my head, it wasn't making sense really quickly.
It's a little insider baseball, and to be honest, I think it was an area in which we felt that. I'll tell you this: what you're interested in, I was also interested in. But for the sake of the general audience, we felt it was better to just say she saved up a lot of money, she was able to put a down payment on a helicopter, and off she went. And in reality, it kind of happened that fast, so I don't know if it needed too much more context. But I'm happy to go inside baseball with you on this. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, so if I decide that I want to get back into the helicopter or an airplane, I basically am going to have to come up with a minimum of $50,000 because she bought this, what was that, back in 88, 89? So we're probably talking now a good $75,000 to $100,000 down payment I would need.
I have no idea. And if there's people listening that are looking into buying helicopters, I commend you and the effort. But I must warn you that from what I gather, and I wish Zoe was here because she could actually tell you all the details about helicopter maintenance. I mean, the costs are extraordinary with a helicopter. And I think that was, and Marika explains this in the film when she first starts, when she becomes a camera operator and she's shooting, she's talking about the pressure that was put upon them to get the stories because the helicopter maintenance was so expensive. So it was almost like they were taking these bold gambles on how to get the stories with the expectation that they would make more money. But the challenge was that they had a huge overhead. So I want to ramble about helicopter maintenance, but I'm not an expert. But what I'll tell you is that between fuel and actually having to replace a helicopter engine every certain amount of years, it's a huge cost burden to own a helicopter, I think.
And I think what the movie does explain is these were independents. When they started off, they didn't work for any particular big news agency. It wasn't like they worked for CBS or NBC or anybody like that. They just thought, hey, we can get some stories because they've been really good at it, like you said, on the ground getting these stories, and now they're doing this investment. But I do want to move on to more about what the movie is about. The movie is not about the cost of getting this helicopter, but
no, that's, but it does it. There is, I think, what's actually interesting about talking about that is it does explain the pressure that they faced, and that was the looming. That was actually a big looming challenge that they always were in the midst of because their ambition was so big that they had to really hustle to get the stories. And I think that that pressure is what drove them in a lot of ways to do the work that they did. So,
And they changed. I mean, L.A. had been doing news reporting from helicopters for a while. But until 1991-92 when the riots broke out, there was, I don't think helicopter reporting was seen as valuable as all of a sudden it became. And Marika and at the time Bob were the first ones on the scene where they actually got the shot of the truck driver being pulled out of the truck and beaten to death because people were upset about the Rodney King verdict. Which we'd have to go back and do all the history.
There's a lot of context.
And so that's why we're encouraging people to watch the documentary Whirlybird.
Yeah.
But what can you tell me about what happened in that moment with Marika and Bob in the helicopter, and what they got, and how that changed the face of broadcasting?
So I think you're right to hone in on the riots as a moment in media history when the live audience interest surged. But I would go a little further back to another event that they covered, which is featured in the film, which is the first live high-speed pursuit. And so we use that as an example, and it really shouldn't necessarily represent the absolute moment that culture necessarily shifted, but it was part of a moment in news coverage when they were realizing that live news was very compelling to people. And so we hone in on that moment when Zoe Ter and Marika Gerard covered the first live high-speed pursuit. And the audience numbers were huge. And as Marika says in the film, you knew that this was going to happen again. And so when you move forward then to the riots, I think the riots is a little bit trickier to sum up just as simply bleak news entertainment. I think that it was a true breaking news event that needed to be covered. And I think that that Zoe and Marika were incredible journalists and reporters to have the instincts that something was about to explode. And so they went there. But yes, as a result, people were fascinated. And they were tuned in. They were horrified. And they felt compelled to watch. And I think that that then crystallizes that hunger that the audience has for live news crystallizes with the OJ pursuit, which, of course, they also covered.
Right.
So there you have it.
Yeah. And it was shocking for me, even after being in the news for all these years and seeing a lot of stuff, that very first police chase, high-speed chase that they did cover, and it wound up in a death, which they showed on TV. The station I work for, and I think many in the Salt Lake area, we are not allowed to even show, like, body bags. Right. Like, that it is... Like, you do not. We've actually had some of our reporters fired for just running up to a scene. There was a small plane that crashed, and they just ran up with, you know, like Facebook Living it. And she didn't even know what she was going to come up to. Mm-hmm. And that was a big no-no. Because, I mean, now, fortunately, nothing got caught on her camera, but just the fact that she ran up without even knowing what she was going to encounter and Facebooking it live was enough to... So I'm watching this documentary, and this high-speed chase happened almost 30 years ago, and I was just mortified. I went, oh my God, they showed this on television.
I think that that is the inherent risk in live news coverage. But what makes it, I think... more difficult to, if I could rephrase that, what I would say makes it a more complicated matter is that you have to balance the public's right to know what's going on with the sensitivity towards the people that are being affected in front of the camera, and for that matter, the people who might be traumatized by watching this stuff. So there was a, there's been, this isn't really in the film, we're kind of just talking about the culture of helicopter reporting, and I'll say that my film kind of focuses really on this couple as our narrative drive in the film, but just to get outside big picture stuff. Los Angeles eventually came, their live news coverage eventually had a reckoning when they documented a man who killed himself on live TV. I think that was in maybe... I don't remember the date. It was mid to late 90s. I think that, as they say when they describe that moment, what happened was they had actually cut into children's programming to show this live news coverage. And I think that at that moment, there was a reevaluation of what they were deciding to broadcast live. And I think that, but I'll say this, I don't think we've necessarily gotten a whole lot better. I think we still live in a gawker culture, and that we're can't look away. And because we can't look away, it seems almost like we are feeding the monster. So take with that from what you want.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else that you want to tell the audience about Whirly Bird itself, your experience in meeting this couple, or what you've learned about news coverage by delving into this history?
I guess what I would say is that I started this film with the intention to tell a story about Los Angeles and take the audience through Los Angeles, and what I didn't expect was to have the opportunity to reflect on very human issues that we all deal with in our life through the bold and generous, candid conversations that I had with Zoe and Marika. And so I think that the film, I'd like to think that the film provides more than just simply a slice of news history. It's a deep exploration of two people that I think we can all reflect on our own lives with.
All right. Thank you so much, Matt Yoka. Again, you are the director, producer, writer of the documentary Whirly Bird, and that's showing here at Sundance. And I am live at Insta Karma at the Cabin in Sundance, and it's so great to meet you at this show.
Thank you so much, Heather.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's hkelly@ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.